Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I'm not wearing the gear, but I'm going to leave that up to Don Moeller. We're going to send everybody over to Catonsville to see our friends at El Guapo and State Fair, working on some chicken and waffles over there, and our dear friend Evan Brown. We appreciate all of our sponsors. And don't forget, any time of the year is a good time of the year to order some Fadley's crab cakes, some mac and cheese. Drop by curbside. Don, very, very close, right? They're going to be right up the street from you at some point soon, right?
I cannot wait. The progress, I'm trying to follow the progress. I see folks in there working, so Fadley's coming to Catonsville.
It's not real to me till I see the second floor there on Frederick, right? That's true. And last but never least, Moeller and Gary Realty. Jeff Moeller was a guest of ours last week, doing a little real estate work, doing a little Ravens off season. You can find them at Moeller and Gary. Don, we've talked so much about foundations in the first 2 years now. I guess we're getting up on 500 episodes of Baltimore Positive, and foundations are foundational to this city. And today is, I just said to my wife, amidst all the madness, I said, I'm going to learn today, because I've seen Harry, Jeanette, Weinberg everywhere, and I've even got an island story I'm going to bring into this, but I want you to welcome her in, because I don't know enough, but I have a feeling like 30 minutes from now, I'm going to know more.
I tell you, and I'm convinced that 30 minutes from now, we're going to need to say we need to have our guests back. It is a pleasure to welcome to Baltimore Positive the president and CEO of the Weinberg Foundation, Rachel Monroe. Rachel, welcome to Baltimore Positive.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, and thank you for what you're doing for the city.
No, well, thank you. You know, I got to start with the obvious. I look down, I swear it's a factor of age, Rachel. It says 10 years. I say, wait a minute, Rachel cannot have been running Weinberg for 10 years. Does it feel like 10 years, Rachel?
Well, I've been there for 15, so there's that.
Yeah. Holy.
I started at Weinberg in 2005 as its first chief operating officer, and then had the privilege of being promoted to president and CEO in 2010. So February 10th actually is the 11-year anniversary.
That's just amazing. Remarkable run. We're going to get into all of that. And as Nestor said, we do love talking foundations, because we think they are such a key part of making Baltimore great and believing in this city. But one of the things we like to do, Rachel, for our listeners, is let them know who the folks are that come on and visit with us. And, you know, somehow you just didn't turn into this Rachel Monroe, who's running one of the major foundations in the United States of America. There was this little girl that grew up and had family connections and brothers that she likes to talk about. Tell us a little bit about your family background and how you got to where you are.
So I'm originally a Virginia girl, grew up in Alexandria, Virginia. I have one elder brother I'll tell you about. He's extraordinary. I pale in comparison to him in every way. My parents, look, let me tell you this. If you made a list of 10,000 families and you studied every single one of them to pick what family you would be in, that's the family I got. So I have had the blessing of a loving, wonderful family every single day of my life. My father, who died in August, and we miss terribly, was one of the original partners of a law firm that started in D.C. called Arnold & Porter. It's now one of the preeminent national firms. My mother was an elementary school teacher, stayed home for a while and took care of my brother and me, and went into the volunteer world and ended up working in the museum world. But she is a woman who her whole life volunteered to teach illiterate adults how to read. She marched with Martin Luther King Jr. She worked for Johnson and Kennedy. She's part of the fabric of making a difference. And my father, one of the things he did without even realizing it is deeply care about helping people find jobs successfully. Didn't matter if it was the man who was taking care of something at the house or someone who was a, you know, preeminent attorney in the city or anything in between. He loved connecting people to meaningful work and did that our whole life. We saw that happening all the time. So I come to it genuinely through two parents who are extraordinary. My brother is an environmental lawyer, worked at the EPA under Obama. He's the longest serving chief counsel of the EPA, then went to Patagonia, where he was their chief environmental advocate. And last week just announced he is now senior advisor to the new administrator of the EPA. And, you know, we'll continue to have a role, God willing, at the EPA and Patagonia and making a difference in our earth for a long time. I'm married to an amazing man who I'm still at the age of 52, very much in love with and think he's the cat's meow. He is a teacher and making a difference in the lives of kids every day. He's the chair of a high school history department and was a coach for a long time. He's an Ohio football boy. And we have three children, 22, 21, and 18. And we have two dogs who you may hear in the background at some point. A 12-year-old black lab who's blind and the sweetest thing you've ever met. And a new rescue puppy who is very timid and we love to pieces.
Rachel, you had Nestor. You had Nestor at puppy. When people talk puppies or kittens or cats, I'm just going to sit back because I know the next 10 minutes I'm done.
I stopped 20 minutes ago to pet a dog, and I'm telling you, it almost cost me the show here before it's all over. Yeah, I'll just say this, and I full disclosure, you know, I was walking the city 20 minutes ago through the harbor, and I haven't stopped, but I will now. At how many places, well, you know, like in just every day of my life where it's on the wall, just driving down any, pick any street, literally. And I guess most Baltimoreans don't know enough. And this is where, like, I've been here my whole life. I'm 52. I live at the Inner Harbor. I see it. My relationship with it was, I did a lot of work for Ed Block 20 years ago and they had a match. Sounds like even before you were there. I was familiar with those matches, but I'm also just familiar with all of these places I've been all over the city that do charitable work or do hospital work or do meaningful work that just have the name on the wall, but I honestly never Googled, thought, did, or whatever. But I did find myself in Hawaii 15 months ago for the first time in my life, and it was everywhere there. And I'm like, I know they're Baltimore people because I've been everywhere and I've only really seen it. I've seen it other places, but here specifically, but for what you do in Baltimore and the names on every building, that's just a heck of a story as to how this has come about over the last century, right?
Yeah. So Harry Weinberg immigrated to Baltimore when he was 4 or 5 years old, depending on family mythology, if you will. He grew up in poverty in the city. He finished school in 6th, 7th, or 8th grade. He was a classic entrepreneur, and his first success was selling American paraphernalia at the end of World War I on the streets. P.S. to November 4th, 1990, when Harry Weinberg dies, he's buried here in Baltimore. He had two homes he loved, Honolulu and Baltimore. And
two of my favorite places.
Yeah. And he left almost $1 billion to the Weinberg Foundation. That was in 1990. So today, 31 years later, we have distributed $2.4 billion in grants, and we have $3 billion in assets. So we've turned $1 billion so far into $5.4 billion. And all we do is give grants to nonprofits that are providing direct services for people experiencing poverty. Now, I'll give you a big asterisk. Prior to 2005, the foundation made lots of wonderful grants that were not exactly in the sweet spot of the mission of the foundation. So when you go to the Shedd Aquarium, pardon me, the Baltimore Aquarium, you will see our name on the plaza. That is an older, lovely grant, but an older grant and not exactly in the zone of helping people experiencing poverty. So since 2005, the foundation has funded health, education, jobs, and housing for people experiencing poverty. In Baltimore, across the United States, and also in Israel. And that is the nature of what we do. Today, we give about $130 million in grants. About $30 million of that a year is here in Baltimore and the greater Maryland region. We are the single largest foundation in terms of giving in this area. The Annie Casey Foundation, who we love and respect down the street in Baltimore, run by Lisa Hamilton and an extraordinary board and staff, have a similar sized asset base, and they give money in Baltimore as well, but not at the extent that the Weinberg Foundation does.
Rachel, I'm sure it's like, I mean, there's so much in what you just said. Let me start on the financial side first.
It's a lot of money.
Almost, you know, when you say you started a billion, you've turned it into three.
Well, I'm trying to put a billion and 90 into perspective, right, Don. And just for my audience and anybody who'd be sports for Baltimore, the Orioles were bought for $173 million, right around that range. So it was five times the amount of money. You could have bought the Dallas Cowboys five times with $1 billion. Like as much now,
not
right?
Not that been, we want them, but yeah.
We would not want them. But I'm just saying the most expensive football franchise transacted right around that time for $125 million. So it would have actually been eight NFL franchises at that time that would have been worth $1 billion, and you're now worth three.
Worth three
but
billion,
if distributed but two, 2.4 more, right?
So you could say $5.4 billion in total impact.
So, I mean, the remark, I guess, Rachel, one of my questions is, and it's probably the anal part of me or the stress part of me that thinks about being a CEO or a manager.
It's the math thinking, that's killing
suddenly,
it.
It is. The math's working on me because I'm thinking, wait a minute now. Rachel is charged not only with making sure, I love the way you talk about these targeted grants, and we're going to get into that, but also making sure that the investments are working and that they're good investments and that the pot continues to grow. Talk about the financial. I know it's probably not your favorite part, but talk about the financial management part and responsibility that falls to you.
And you're also going to leave it to the next people, whoever they are, right? Literally.
Right. Look, if we do a good job in the life of the Weinberg Foundation, which God willing will live into perpetuity, you know, centuries from now, if we do our job well, one day someone will look back and say that chapter was a good chapter. That's what we hope to achieve. This is not our money. This will never be our money. We are lucky stewards in this moment to try to use these precious philanthropic funds as effectively as possible. And Don, you're absolutely right. The investment management is critically important because if that's not done well, then we don't have grants to distribute. So it has a direct impact on what the foundation can do for the community. And over the past decade, we brought our investment staff in-house. We had outsourced management. And 6 years ago, we brought it in-house, and we have a team that is extraordinary who work also with many consultants. We have also four outside investment advisors on our investment committee so that the assets are managed extremely well. The returns are very strong, but we pay attention to volatility and risk because we don't want to be swinging from fences. This is philanthropic money we want to protect. And the work is critically important to our success. People think of foundations, they think about grants. It's, you know, sounds less sexy and less appealing to think about the financial management of the actual assets, but that is primary to the role of a foundation.
Well, and you on that financial side, if I understand what you just said, you actually have your own quote unquote Jonathan Murray group in-house. It's
yes.
The Weinberg group. You have your own stockbroker group and investment group in under your roof.
We have an internal investment team led by an amazing man named Jonathan Hook. We stole him from Ohio State University. He was the chief investment officer there, and his number two, a man named David Gilmore, who was also at Ohio State, and the two of them lead the team in the office, and they do superior work. And so, we have a board that is very knowledgeable of investments and many consultants, and again, these four outside advisors who give us a lot of time and care and look at what we're doing and give guidance in what we're doing.
So a Northwestern Wildcat was comfortable bringing a Buckeye on board to count the dollars. Is that
okay,
about
so,
sum it up?
So here's my Big Ten story. My dad went to Purdue undergrad. My mom went to Indiana undergrad. My husband is a Buckeye. I went to Northwestern. My brother went to Michigan. My
Y'all
daughter
had bad
graduated
weather.
From Michigan. My son started at Indiana. And my youngest, who's on a gap year in Israel, will start at Ohio State in the fall. So we have almost all of them covered.
So the Big Ten television network is must.
You can just do Maryland now. You're still in the Big Ten. It's perfect. It's like homegrown.
And Northwestern's doing much better. You got to give them a shout out.
They wear purple, so at least they get that. You know, I mean, every time the Ravens put those black pants on, I said they look like Northwestern. Rachel Monroe is here talking all things Harry and Jeanette Weinberg and the foundation and money. Poverty, right? Poverty. You talked about a lot of the places that I see the name, and whether it's Holocaust Museum or Remembrance Park, and just all that I think about driving past Mercy and places, I just see it. Every time I go over to Patisserie Poupon, I see the work being done over the east side near Fayette. And but for poverty, you obviously said there was a pivot there where, hey, we give money to everybody, we love everybody, we love, you know, all things to get at poverty, which is always been here, right? And that's kind of a big pivot, I guess, for how much money we're talking about and where you wanted to distribute it. I don't know that we're ever going to wipe out poverty, right? I mean, like, but certainly a noble cause, and drilling down into that sort of is the seed for everything, right? That's sort of the roots in the dirt of everything, crime, education, all of that begins with, we need to feed these people and give them a chance, right?
Yeah, so I would share with you one of the quotes we have from Harry Weinberg is as follows. While others are solving all of the ills of the world, someone will be hungry, someone will be cold, someone will be sick. That is our job. So that is what we believe our job is. And when you think about Baltimore City, you think about 37% of our children are growing up in poverty. You think about the number of children who have issues with housing, with food, with education, with clothing, with heating, with all sorts of holistic things they need. So what does Weinberg do about that? One of the things we've learned, or at least I've learned, is we can be much more effective if we genuinely partner and collaborate with others than if we do anything ourselves. Individual check writing of grants is important. We continue to do that with a lot of care and deliberation. We do a lot of due diligence and, if you will, kick the tires hard before we make a grant. And we're proud of those grants. But if we want to have real impact, you think about the Baltimore Weinberg Library Project, okay? And we've built 17 libraries in Baltimore City Public Schools. We're serving almost 15% of all students. It's not only about literacy. There are more than 70 evidence-based studies in the United States that say in city public school buildings, libraries, strong libraries, which means facility, technology, books, and staff, every marker of that school improves. To your shock, obesity goes down, absenteeism goes down, graduation rates go up, family engagement goes up, and literacy goes up. So we are working with more than 30 partners to build these libraries. We've given $15 million. Others have given $30 million. So $45 million is the commitment so far to those projects, and we have four more being built right now. So that is one example of what we're trying to do related to poverty in the city. And who are the partners? So Enoch Pratt is a major partner. Not only do they make sure that when they have a children's book author, that children's book author is speaking to and reading their books to kids in the Baltimore Weinberg libraries, but they're making sure those kids have library cards, and they're putting several hundred adult books in each library for free that the family parents can come, or grandparents, and take that book home and have it. And the Baltimore Sun is putting newspapers in every library every single day. And Operation Warm is bringing coats to every kid in every school, distributed by the fire department and the police department, and on and on and on. Uh-oh, I don't hear him.
Nestor, are you on mute?
I'm muted. I said Heidi Daniels' name came up about an hour ago. So, you know, in talking all things Baltimore positive, reading, literacy, libraries, schools, all of this on a percentage basis, I'm sure that at the bottom of all of it, that's where your money goes.
Yes, yes. And we don't, you know, many foundations are really focused on children. Annie Casey gives $130 million a year, all focused on children. And that is extraordinary. But they are not even in the top 20 of foundations that fund children's needs. One of the things Weinberg does incredibly seriously is low-income older adults. And we are giving roughly $30 million a year in the area of low-income older adults. And we're either number one or two in the country of focusing on low-income older adults, which is not as it should be.
What does that assistance look like, Rachel? I apologize for jumping in. When you say we're helping low-income senior adults,
here's a great example here in Baltimore. So there are more than 2,000 low-income older adult homeowners in Baltimore City who have a serious home repair need, a roof that's leaking, a hot water issue that's leaking, a ramp they need to their steps, grab rails they need in the bathroom.
That sounds like a couple hundred bucks to us, and like literally, right?
So long story short, every city in America through their local hubs office has a list of low-income older adults who need repairs. We came in and said, how do we stop the bottleneck of this list and get everything fixed? So a partnership together did that in Baltimore in 2017. Weinberg so far has given $8.5 million to this, and more than 2,000 low-income older adults in Baltimore City have kept their homes. By the way, the homes have older adults, their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren. It's an intergenerational play, and it avoids blight. These 2,000 people might not have been able to stay in those homes, and it is their single most precious asset in terms of finances that they're securing. Baltimore County, to their credit, has just replicated this model with a program called Because, frankly, they've seen the success in Baltimore. We are hoping that Governor Hogan will support doing this around the state, and we could claim being the first state to get all of these low-income older adults securely in their home and not having any kind of 18-month waiting list to do so.
Rachel, I had a 98-year-old mother a few years ago, you know, and I always think, like, what would have happened if I didn't come? You know, like, who would have taken care of her? And these simple needs you're talking about, it's almost, we talk about government money, or we talk about helping people with mortgages or PPPs, and I'm a business owner, we hear about all of this, but when... That's like a mortgage payment. To say, here's something broken in your home, it's better than a mortgage payment to some degree, right? To keep things operational. So this is where people are right now, where it's 28 degrees outside right now, right?
Correct. So that's a good example of how we can support the low-income older adult community in Baltimore City. And it's not a complicated thing to do, but Weinberg can't do that alone. We had to partner with 8 nonprofits, with a lot of city agencies to make it happen. And the 18-month waiting list is gone.
That being functional, the part where you partner with other people and you vet them and you do, and then now we have a pandemic, we have all these things going on. That part, the other part, not the money part, the actual, we keep talking about vaccines. You know, there's so many layers in this, trying to figure out how we get from that thing was made in a factory to how we actually get it into Edmondson Village. And the shout out to Felicia on the west side we had on earlier. But that part of it, that's really where it gets hairy, especially, I think, in the perception of local government here that we're all trying to make better.
Yeah. And when you think about the fabric of Baltimore, you have strong bookends with University of Maryland Medical Systems and Johns Hopkins. You have business, you have government, you have nonprofit, and you have philanthropy. And unlike other cities, one of the good stories to tell about Baltimore is the way these communities work well together. We work in many cities, and in some cities, you do not see what is happening in Baltimore. So another example for jobs, which is so important, right? There's something called the Baltimore Workforce Funders Collaborative. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this. There are 16 members of it. It's raised more than $20 million in the past few years to build jobs training programs, placement programs, coaching programs, tracking individuals for 2 years once they're in the job, working with employers so they're ready to receive trained individuals. And there are models of this around the country. It's incredibly successful in Baltimore. So there are very good examples of the multiplier effect, if you will, of these partnerships. Weinberg couldn't do that alone. And of the 16 partners, I don't know how many of them could do it alone. Maybe none of them. But together, you're seeing things move. You're seeing change happening. Another good example is the Summer Funding Collaborative. I don't know if you're familiar with this.
What's that one called again, Rachel?
Summer Funding.
He takes notes, Rachel. He's got a little yellow pad.
I'm happy. I have more information on all of this, Don, than you can imagine. I can send it all to you.
I'd love it.
I'll send it to you. And some of these people are amazing nonprofit leaders who could come on the show and share stories that would be emotionally powerful for you to hear.
Well, I'm going to warn you. You remember when the Biden grandkids said, be careful if you give my grandfather your cell number, he's going to call you. Yeah. So you've just made that offer because we want to tell these stories.
As a one-time student of Mueller, he does his homework. You know what I mean? He just does.
Talk about your summer funding program.
So when you think, forget about COVID slide, summer slide, you've heard the expression before, kids in city schools who are not in school for those 3 or 4 months. And when they start back in August or September, they don't start where they left in June, right? They've lost traction. So first they have to regain and get back to where they were. Unless your summer funding, your summer programming is not only outdoor recreational with good nutrition and good activities, but also has an educational component that's compelling and interesting to the kids. So lots of foundations and lots of corporate philanthropy and individual donors in Baltimore, and we have a very strong individual donor community, thank God. They formed what we call the Baltimore Summer Funding Collaborative. There's more than a dozen partners in this now. It's run by Baltimore's Promise. Since 2015, just about $20 million has been provided. Now, here's the beauty of it. Many of the summer funding programs are small programs in specific locations in the city, run by a few people. They do not have time to deal with asking for funding through proposals to a half dozen foundations or a dozen foundations, right? It's a pain in the neck. One-stop, one application. We all agree to look at that application and not ask for anything else. We all make individual funding decisions, and then we total it up and show what's getting done. And at the end of the summer, the evaluation is one evaluation that the nonprofit puts in the same portal, so all of us get the same evaluation. So it's incredibly efficient, and it's getting a lot of dollars out. The other thing that's happening is, as we announce what's getting funded, a lot of individual donors in the city will call and say, Rachel, I don't have the bandwidth to look through these, but I'm getting calls. Can you help me with thinking about what to do to help summer funding? And I'll say, sure. I'm going to send you the list of the 75 or the 95 summer programs that were funded through the collaborative. And individual donors are then saying, okay, those are sort of, you know, they've checked the box as a safe financial investment, and they can pick and choose what they want to fund. Baltimore's Promise and the Baltimore Community Foundation are extraordinary partners in making collaborations happen and making Agenda move forward. The philanthropic community, in response to COVID in Baltimore, raised several million dollars that were distributed quickly. And the Baltimore Community Foundation and Baltimore's Promise played important roles in that, along with others, including the what used to be called the Association for Baltimore Area Grantmakers, now the Maryland Philanthropy Networker Group.
We are with Rachel Monroe, President and CEO of the Weinberg Foundation. Rachel, I would imagine we talked about the stress of managing the portfolio, but I want to jump now to the back end. You give out $130 million worth of grants in housing and health and jobs and education and community safety, those five focus areas that you have. I would imagine that as an organization, you're pretty serious on the back end of making sure that the dollars that you distribute are generating results. Can you share with us a little bit about how that process evolves?
Is there an unfunding? Is there a 10% that have gone away as well?
So a few answers to the questions. One is, for every time we say yes to a grant, I get the job of saying no 9 times. We are asked for much more than we're able to fund, right? About half of what we do is proactive grant making, like the older adults program called Hubs, or the Summer Funding Collaborative, or the Library Project. But about half of what we do are one-on-one grants that we review, largely capital grants, as you've seen the name of the foundation all over the city. Harry Weinberg owned property, believed in real estate as an asset, and half of our grants are capital grants for nonprofits for their capital needs. So we can be accused very fairly of kicking the tires very hard before we make a grant. The good news is we have great confidence once we make the grant, it is a smart, safe grant and will deliver the results.
They call you tough.
Yes, they call us tough, but I think there's value to getting a grant from Weinberg, because many other funders will say, oh, you have Weinberg funding? Here you go. They'll trust that as due diligence for themselves, particularly individual donors with whom we have many relationships who will call and say, hey, you know, nonprofit X asked us for funding. Would you share with us your thoughts about that organization?
That's a hell of a responsibility, right? You get sunburned on that very quickly, right?
Well, it's incredibly sensitive work that you need to really honor the organization, whether or not you funded them. There are plenty of organizations doing extraordinary work that we cannot fund because they don't fit in the 14 things that we're funding under that rubrics that Don just explained. So there's lots of great work going on that, unfortunately, you know, the aquarium is doing amazing environmental work. We don't fund environmental work. So that's something we have to say no to. That doesn't mean we said no because we don't think they're amazing. It's just we're trying to be focused the same way we're asking nonprofits to be focused in the work they execute.
Well, Rachel, before we had promised your staff, at least on this initial sit down, that we would only hold you a half an hour because we know you're busy. But before we let you run, and I'm sure it's like asking you about your children, right? But if you were to look back on your 15 years at Weinberg, your 10 years as president and CEO, and say there was one particular grant, then when you look back on it, you say, that's why I love doing this. What is there one? Or I'll even let you hedge a little. Are there two that you say, man, that's why I get up in the morning?
So I'll answer you a little bit inaccurately to the question, but hopefully it will satisfy the request. What gives me energy and what keeps me going on the hard days, on the days we say no, on the days there we see sad stuff. Because keep in mind, we are not funding environment. We're not funding museums. We're not funding universities. We're not funding symphonies. If foundation work at large, if philanthropic work does its job, we wrap a quilt around the community to help keep it protected in all of those ways. And thank God there are other foundations and individual private donors who give to all of those things we don't. And we're going to do our best to make sure our squares on that quilt focused on those experiencing poverty are strong, right? That's our job. And what's interesting is despite the big numbers, we are also very small. So our staff size is about 65. Where our grant size, the number of staff who review grants for us is 14. That's half the size of any other foundation of our asset size. We like to say we're small and mighty, but I would confess we're small, mighty, and tired. But what's interesting is while the numbers are big, sometimes it's the smallest grants that really, you know, hit you in your kish keys and just make you say, you know, stay steady, don't start crying in this site visit. And one of the things we do, which I'm happy to invite both of you to, is called the Employee Giving Program. Every employee at the foundation, from our receptionist to just beneath my position, is given the opportunity every other year to make a $25,000 grant to a nonprofit in Baltimore or for our staff in Hawaii.
My dream job. That's my next job. Is I'm gonna work for Weinberg. I mean, not here, Honolulu. You're gonna need me over there, I'm sure.
So give me 10 seconds. So every staff member, they have to do the due diligence. They have to make a site visit. They have to write up a report, right? But in those presentations, you will have a colleague who will say, and these are true stories. Craig's listening. He can say so. I, employee X, am making this grant to this particular women's and children's shelter. And I'm not just making it because they fit our mission like hand in glove and all of their data is superior. I'm giving it because, unbeknownst to you, I was born there. And it's the first time in my life I've been in a position of giving instead of receiving. So for me, Don, the grants that our staff make like that, for me, keep me steady on the hard days. We have another employee who shared a mentoring program in the city that helped his brother when he was facing real challenges in terms of behavior and violence. He's since lost his brother, but his happiest memories of his brother as a young adult was when he was in that mentoring program. And, you know, you don't lose that. That is what sustains you. So for me, while the work we do is hard and emotional and sad, I don't know how to have a bigger impact and make a difference in our world. And, you know, the story of the starfish on the beach, you know, we probably can't throw all the starfish back in the water, but we're going to throw as many as we darn can.
Rachel, before we let you run, I mean, full disclosure, I would have been full waterworks if I was on those visits with you. It wouldn't have been enough Kleenex in the house. So I understand the emotional attachment. Before we let you run, if people want to get involved or make donations, can they get involved with Weinberg?
Okay, so important comment. We do not raise any money. Do not send us money. We will never solicit you for money. All we do is take that $3 billion in assets, manage it as carefully as we can, and then distribute grants as a result, roughly 5% a year. So if you want to get involved, Weinberg is not your avenue to get involved. But if you're trying to decide where you want to get involved and you're trying to pick a nonprofit that you know is high quality, if it's in the area of health or education or jobs or housing, come and see what we have funded and you know they will be amazing places. And if you need connecting to those organizations, you know, we can all help someone find the right connection to have that phone call.
We don't hear that much. Don't give to us, give to them, literally.
And to help them. Correct. Well, Nestor, I want to say, as we get ready to say goodbye to Rachel today, people often ask us, what motivated this? Why did you guys want to become involved? What makes you believe so much in the future of this city? And today's episode is just another wonderful example. It's people like Rachel Monroe and her staff and the folks at Weinberg and the other foundations. The future for Baltimore folks, and this includes all of you out there in the suburbs who like to throw those stones, come on down, get involved, pay attention. because the future of Baltimore is indeed positive. And with that, Nestor, what a great episode.
Well, I'll tell you what, I learned a lot over 30 minutes, and right now I need some of that Hawaiian shave ice, even though it's cold out. But the Honolulu thing and the Baltimore thing, bringing it together and learning even more just about everything you do, gratitude for your time. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for what you all are doing. And if we can ever be helpful, let us know. And just know that we understand there are two stories to Baltimore, and we strongly support the positive, uplifting, hopeful future story.
So do
we. Well, Rachel, when you come back, as I said, we need more time. When you come back, I'd like to talk about the whole Israel connection and the other efforts there, because Weinberg's doing some amazing things there. So maybe we can work through your staff and have you back on in the not too distant future to talk about other items.
I would be happy to. It's an honor.
Stay safe, all right?
Yeah,
stay safe. Keep doing the great work out there. Rachel Monroe joining us from the area. And Harry and Jeanette Weinberg, hjweinbergfoundation.org. All sorts of information about who they are, where they give. If you just came in late, you can find it out in the podcast Audio Vault here at WNST. We are Baltimore Positive.